We get the opportunity to read this week the parsha of Baal Lo Sicha. Parsha Baal Lo Sicha has a number of fascinating pieces to it. We've discussed in the past, actually, Rabbi Soloveitchik's whole approach to Parshas Baal Lo Sicha, in which he looks at it as from a global standpoint. And if you look at all of these storylines in Baal Lo Sicha, it doesn't really seem to fit. But the way that he views it, which we'll mention a little bit later, is that there actually is one major theme. He calls this parsha Baal Lo Sicha like a landmark parsha, because this was the parsha that should be, as we'll see, all the preparations that are underway to eventually get the Jews into Israel, and it doesn't end up turning out the way. But let's go to the beginning of the parsha. The parasha tells us about the menorah. Baal Lo Sicha haneros amul pnei menorah ya'iru shivas haneros, that they shall light in the menorah. The seven, right? There were seven lamps in the menorah. Vayas kein Aaron amul pnei menorah. This is what Aaron would do. Kasher tziva Hashem es Moshe. Now, there's a very interesting comment of Rashi. Rashi says, "Lama nismecha parshas haMenorah leParshas haNesiim." Rashi wants to know why is, as my cousin calls it, why are they neighbors? Right? Why is this week's parsha Baal Lo Sicha and the menorah? Why is it neighbors with last week's parsha about the Nesiim and all the gifts that they gave? So Rashi explains, Shara Aaron Chanukas haNesiim chol shodaito. When Aaron saw everything being offered, he became very weak. He wasn't involved in those gifts, so he feels bad. He's like there's a part of him that feels missing, diminished, less than. I want to be involved in that dedication. All the Nesiim, they brought all of these great things. They dedicated it all. The Mishkan was gorgeous and magnificent, and I wasn't part of it. And I want to be part of that mitzvah. I want to be part of that, you know, partnership with building the Mishkan. So chol shadaito, he feels bad. This, like he's weak. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Chayecha, Shalcha gedola mishalahem. Don't worry, your portion is greater. Because you'll get to light the menorah. So what exactly does that mean? What exactly does that mean? How does any of that make sense? Says the Ramban, does Aaron not realize that he gets the opportunity to offer sacrifices every single day? He's going to offer all these karbanos. So he's upset because they had a one-time deal? They had a one-time dedication. Here he is. Aaron gets to be involved every single day. Shouldn't that make him feel better? Why is he so upset? And second of all, how does the menorah help that? So understand, Aaron sees last week's parsha, then you see him giving. He says, oh my gosh, I didn't get to give. Hashem says, don't worry. You get to light the menorah. Says the Ramban, wait a second. He gets to do karbanos, and why is he even so sad? And if he even is so sad, how does the menorah help him at all? So I'll share with you the Ramban's answer that he suggests, but it's worth discussing. Says the Ramban that actually Aaron is having an internal debate. There's a debate about which is better, which is holier, to volunteer to do something or do something because I am told to do it. Right? Ask this question to your friends and neighbors. Which one is better, volunteer for something or be told to do it? You'd want somebody to say, I volunteer to clean my room. I volunteer to come help out at the function. First is fine. You ask me to do it, I'll do it. So which one is better? And the truth is, this is an argument in the Gemara. The Gemara is a debate, what's called the mitzuve ve'ose versus an eino mitzuve ve'ose. Who is better? The Gemara tells us a number of places. Is it better that one who is commanded and does those things, or one who is not commanded? He's eino mitzuve ve'ose. And in the end, we are told, which one is better? The mitzuve ve'ose. The commanded who does it is better than the guy who volunteers. One second. Don't we want volunteer time, chesed hours? Why is the mitzuve ve'ose? Why is the one who is commanded to do it and does it? Why is he better? So the number of answers to this question. So some suggest, the Tosas suggests this, other Achronim suggest this, that when I am commanded to do it, immediately I have a Yetzer Hara. The moment that I have to do something and I'm commanded to do it, my Yetzer Hara says, come on, it's not worth it. You got a busy day. Don't do it. The moment that I'm commanded in a mitzvah, that's when the Yetzer Hara jumps in. That's one suggestion. Or there is a psychological fear of punishment. if I am commanded to do something and I do not, I'm going to get punished. So therefore, when I'm not commanded, I don't have the Yetzer Hara and I'm not worried about getting punished. You know, like the word charity, Rabbi Sachs used to say all the time that the word tzedakah is not charity. Charity means it's my money, and if I want to, I will give you some of it. Tzedakah is the right thing. It's not mine. The right thing to do is to give it away. So what's happening here is, if I'm not commanded, so I don't have punishment, I don't have any kind of fear, it's volunteer, but when I'm commanded to do it, and there is this Yetzer Hara and a punishment, so that's why it's better. But listen to what the Ritva says. The Ritva was a great 13th century Spanish commentator on the Gemara. He says the following, and I think this is one of the most crucial lessons. I share this with my students. I just this last week, I shared this idea with one of my students who was struggling with something. So the Ritva says, do you know why Mitzuveh Ve'oseh is better? It's because he's Mitzuveh. Because something done out of obedience, out of a sense of obligation to a higher authority, means that I am giving myself to this. And that's the greatest service of God. So here's what happens. Aaron looks at what's going on in the background. Just the other week, all the Nisim gave all their donations, gave it all and donated and volunteered and in abundance. And it seems to him that volunteering and offering to give oneself when not obligated is a greater form of worship. It's greater. And therefore Hashem says, no, you got it wrong. Every day you're going to light the menorah. Every day there's going to be an obligation to light that menorah. So therefore, yours is better than their lot. While the Ramban rejects this idea, Rav Amital used to say that the Ramban got it right. That he answers the question that when I connect with God, not just out of spontaneity, but obligation, commitment, working hard, that's connection with God. So Hashem gives Aaron this added obligation to show him that through total commitment, you can achieve this high level of connection with God. This is, we have this whole debate in the Medrash, right? Which is the greatest pasuk in the Torah, or the greatest line in the Torah, this mitzvah in the Torah. So we know Rabbi Akiva, Haftalarecha, Kamocha, but the Medrash actually says that the greatest pasuk is Asakeves Echad Taaseh V'Boker, Zekla Gadol BaTorah. Every day they offer the Karban Todah, the Karban Tavan, I'm sorry. Every morning, every afternoon. We know this is true in any other field of work, right? Psychologists talk about the 10,000 hour rule, meaning in order to do something notable in some field, you must dedicate 10,000 hours to mastering that discipline. Practice, 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 and then I can get good at it. That's why Rashi says that when the Torah says that Aaron does this, Vayas Ken Aaron, Rashi says, Shaloya Shina Alahagid Shivichol Shal Aaron Shaloshin. He didn't change it all. He just did as he was told. You know, we live in a world now where everybody's trying to find the way that I connect. How do I connect? What's Liebtag's way of feeling that connection? And within Judaism, there is 1,000% a way to find my individual connection within everything. How do I connect to tefillah? What am I thinking about? I just did this exercise this week where my students wrote down things we're davening for, without names, then we shared them around and everybody took somebody else's. What am I davening for? That's what you're davening for. Everybody has personal things that we connect with. But the ultimate connection with God is following the commandments. And it means two things. It means that routine doesn't mean it should lack passion. Of course, we have moments, kumtzitzes, ne'ilah, whatever it is, weddings, things that give us a boost. But it doesn't mean that just because it's routine, it has to lack passion. In fact, the Gemara tells us when we're describing what a sincere davening is, it means it has tachanunim to it, passion, energy, hislavos involved. But there's another idea of mitzuveh ve'oseh. A mitzuveh ve'oseh means that because God asked me to do it, that makes it meaningful. Whether or not I have the greatest benching after I eat, or the most amazing Shemona Esrei on a Wednesday morning at 6 o'clock, either way, I did it because God asked me to do it. And that in and of itself is meaningful. And this is an this is, I think, what's getting lost right now in our religious lives. In our religion, I see with my students, we want to find the things that connect with us. So if it's not meaningful, so why am I doing it? So there's two answers. The first is that's a very dangerous proposition, of course. If I only did things that were meaningful, either I wouldn't do half the things that I do anyway, or I would say, well, maybe meaningful for me means, you know, driving on Shabbos, that's very meaningful for me. So of course, that's a dangerous path to go down. But we have to realize that doing the things that God asks us to do, davening, benching, mitzvot, whatever those mitzvot are, that is meaningful because it happens all the time and God asks me to do it. And that's extremely, extremely an important idea. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has an essay called The Life of Command. And he talks about that if we keep mitzvot because they coincide with my intuitions, that it's part of me, but not part of my avodas Hashem. Avodas Hashem means I serve God. I serve God. So yes, would it be great if everything I did was so meaningful and motivating and inspiring and changing and life-altering? And yeah, it would be, but that would be sometimes very difficult. But it's also meaningful, inspiring, and motivating to do the things, even if I don't have that deep connection every time I do them. But doing them, that routine of halacha, that routine of connection with Hashem is extremely, extremely valuable. And that's what Rashi, that's what the Ramban is alluding to here. And we get to do this every day. We get to do this every day. We light the menorah every day. Every bracha that I make, with every minyan that I attend, every davening that I say, with every halacha that I follow, I light the menorah. Because God says, do it, and I got to light the menorah. And Aaron is given a resounding answer to the question, which one is better, mitzuve ve'ose or eina mitzuve ve'ose? And Hashem says, without a doubt, mitzuve ve'ose. A life of someone who is commanded is greater. Greater because we give ourselves to a higher calling, because we believe that all the things that are commanded are enhancing our lives, because with every act and every mitzvah and every restriction, we do that with the will of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So that's what you have here in the beginning of Parshat Malos with the menorah, this inner battle with Aaron, which one is better, and how the Ramban, how Rashi views this, you know, inner dialogue, so to speak, that Aaron has, you know, about which one is better. Okay, let's move. The puzzle will continue a little bit further. The next part we have is the consecration of the Leviim. You have to remember that everything that happens in this week's parasha is a buildup. The Jews are building up to really go to Israel. This should be it. After this parasha, we should be ready to move. Pasuk Perek Tes in Parsha Baloscha and Sefer Bamidbar, which we have its own chumash on page 778, that teaches us now about the Karban Pesach, Pesach Sheni, those people that came to Moshe with their legitimate grievance to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. We didn't get to offer the carbon originally. And Hashem answers them, yes, you got to answer on the 14th of Iyar, you can offer that. 1 month after the original Pesach would be offered every year, the 14th of Nisan, you can offer on the 14th of Iyar. That's the second chance mitzvah. We've shared in the past, very, very interesting, that no other mitzvah really has a makeup. Right, you can make up davening, you can make up Eish Shemona Esrei, halacha called Tashlumin. You can't make up Sukkos. Can't make up Chanukah. Well, I don't know, like maybe one day we should just like have a whole year off. And one day we'll wake up really early and we'll build a sukkah and then we'll light the menorah and we'll give out shalach manos and we'll eat matzah and we'll fast. And we'll get it all done. And one day it'll be a great day, a big fundraiser day. Okay, we've got little stations, keep going around. Everybody will be in charge of a different holiday. It's going to be very exciting. But until that point, we don't have makeups for other holidays. In fact, we work by laws and by times. You missed it. I didn't count Sphere last night, the whole day. Can I count it? No, you're 2 days late. You can't just make up 49 days at once. With Karban Pesach, we get to offer it. So that has to do with the fact that the Karban Pesach represents Geula and the building of the nation. It's why you find throughout Tanakh, the Karban Pesach is the sacrifice that was always wanted to be rejuvenated. We have it today. Should we offer the Karban Pesach today? You find it in Yoshua. You find it around. This was the Karban. But it's suggested by Rabbi Ari Khan of Bar Ilan University, says that if you look, there's different opinions as to why this group is impure. Right? The Gemara in Sukkah tells us, you can look at the Gemara, you know, for all the other reasons, but one of the opinions says, maybe it was Nadav and Avihu, they touched the body as a Nadav and Avihu, maybe it was a Mace Mitzvah. And the final suggestion is that they were carrying the bones of Yosef. The bones of Yosef. Why would a Pesach Sheni be connected to Yosef? And he suggests, because who else teaches about second chances than Yosef? Yosef is all about second chances. Right, here's a guy who he was thrown into a pit, his life was over, isolated from his family, and yet has a second life. He becomes the head of Egypt. He gives a second chance to his brothers when they come down. Yosef is all about second chances. So if any carbon, any sacrifice, any holiday would be connected with second chances, it would be that of Yosef. It's very interesting. The pasuk, when it talks about these people, they say it's a pasuk Zion. We're tamei. I've shared this in the past, but it's so beautiful. Lama nigara. They say we feel less than. We feel, or Moshe Feinstein says, like they were saying, it hurts us. It hurts us to not do it. But if you were to tell me, there's a halacha that we discover that anybody born in the month of August gets to not fast on Yom Kippur, sign me up. I mean, without a doubt, I'm there. If I have an exemption, like most of us, we have an exemption, we'll be like, yeah, sounds good. I'm not going to get an avera. I'm not going to get a sin. I have an exemption. Right? A person who is very sick, doesn't fast on Tisha B'Av. They don't get an X in Shemayah. They get an exemption. And yet here, they had an exemption. They were putter. They were dealing with something. They were tummy. And they say, Lomani Gara. We feel diminished. Like, mitzvos are supposed to enhance our lives. And when we don't do them, we should feel like, I missed it. I missed that opportunity. I want it in my life. I want to offer that carpet. But we've shared a little bit more in this past. We'll continue on the parsha, because there's a small conversation that we really haven't touched on. Let's go to the end of the parsha and we'll come back to focus on this a little bit. But the end of the parsha, of course, you really have all of this buildup, right? Parsha's Balosra is the parsha that should be. It get finished, the Leviim, Pesach Sheni, the Chatzotros, blowing the trumpets, finish all the last, like this is the last day. They're getting ready to leave, their bags are packed. Right? Like, so when you go on a vacation, so first of all, you always say, for sure, I'm going to pack. And then you never end up packing. And then it's like the night before and you like scramble and pack everything. And then it's the day of, and your flight's in 2 hours. And now you're like stuffing whatever you can into your backpack to take whatever. You have no idea what's in there. That's, so to speak, like Parshas Balosla, just in a much better way. The last minute details. We'll consecrate the Leviim because they're going to have a big job. We'll offer the Pesach Sheni. We'll blow the trumpets. We're ready to go. We have the Mishkan and we have the Torah. What else do we need? Let's march. And then we have the backwards nuns. Backwards nuns appear in page 786. This is where they say everything shifts now. Rabbi Soloveitchik said, this is where it shifts. We should have been in Israel. Moshe would have been Eliyahu HaNavi. Done. Jewish history, over. Finished, done. It would have been great. Beis HaMikdash, no more. No destruction, no exile, none of it. We would have been in Israel. But they begin to complain. And in the past, we've shared that Rabbi Soloveitchik described that this issue that the Jewish people have, why they complain, right? They complain about the meat. They complain about the meat. And the Rav said that when they complain about the meat, that was it. That was like sort of the end all. That made it realize to Moshe, this isn't going to last. Yes, we'll get to Parsha, Shlach next week. And we'll talk about the spies and the fact that the spies is what led to the 40-year decree. But already at this point, we see this generation is not ready. And they begin to complain. There's a lot we learn about complainers in this week's Parsha. It tells us that they say, everybody was crying. Now, everybody was not crying, but complainers, and maybe one or two in your social circle or the complainers. Complainers will always say, but everybody's said this. I heard this from everyone, right? I learned a trick a while ago as a rabbi that when somebody comes to you and says, Rabbi, a lot of people are saying this. You're supposed to say, who? And then they'll be like, oh, it's like my grandmother. Like, it's like one person. But they say, but God, Everybody's crying. Everybody wasn't crying. You know what else complainers do? They tell that in the past, oh my gosh, the past. So Charnu es Hadaga Shanochu Mitzrayim. Remember the Erev Rav saying this week's parasha, how good we had it in Egypt. We had it free of charge. We had cucumbers and melons. Oh, what a gift. What a marketplace we had. It was beautiful. And now this is terrible. They had this audacity. They're being led by God through the desert. But the Jews begin to complain. And we'll notice that they also complain worse than the eagle, says Rabbi Soloveitchik. The Rav explains that the eagle was bad, but you can't explain it. There were mitigating circumstances to the Egel. Moshe was gone. They were off on the times. Whatever, you could explain away, so to speak, the Egel. But here, what they complained about? They want meat. And said the Rav, that's paganism. That desire for lust. It goes against Yadus, against Judaism. We're about limited enjoyment. The ability to say, I can step back. I can withdraw. I can retreat. I don't need all of this. I can value restrictions. I can understand that I just can't have it because I want it. That when I'm driving on the, you know, the turnpike and there's $1.99 a hamburger special, I can't get it. I don't have to have it just because I want it. And when the Jews here at the highest moment that they're supposed to be at, out of Egypt, all the Makos, Kriyas Yamsov, Oz Yashir, the getting of the Torah, the finishing off. And now they say, God, there's no meat. We need more meat. That, says Rabbi Soloveitchik, that's it's Avodah Zarah. And when this happened, Moshe Rabbeinu said, this generation won't last. You know, the Rav actually tells a very personal story when he gave this drasha, he gave like a parsha class in 1974. And it's fascinating. We've done this in the past, so I won't tell too much about it. But the Rav said that all of this came to him when he was looking at the Parsha in Shul this past Shabbos. He gave us, I believe, on a Motzei Shabbos, or maybe on a Monday. All of this came to him as he was looking at the Parsha. It's a reminder to us. We have a beautiful, beautiful Torah, and it's worth it. As we're sitting there in Shul Shabbos morning, the Balkor is laning. We should look inside, look at the English, look at the footnotes. We'll learn something. And the Rav would give a whole shiur. So Rabbi Soloveitchik explained that immediately when they asked this question in the desert, Moshe knew something was wrong. The Rav said that when his wife was very ill, she was sick for 4 years, and he says that, you know, the doctors couldn't fool me, but I was convinced that somehow she would manage to get out of it. They would say that the Rav knew more about medicine when his wife was sick than her own doctors. And he says he remembers the last Yom Kippur before she died. Said it was Kol Nidre night, and he was holding the Sefer Torah. And when the Chazan finished Kol Nidre and said, Shechianu v'kimanu v'yonu l'zman hazeh, I gave the Sefer Torah to a Talmud of mine to put it back in the Aron Kodesh. And he put it in the Aron Kodesh, but he didn't place it well, and it fell. Didn't fall on the floor. It fell in the Aron Kodesh. And he says, I don't know how or why, but at that time I knew nothing was going to save her. I knew she was not going to make it out of that year. And he says, this is what Moshe says. Moshe knows at this moment, way before we get to the Shlach and the Meraglim, Moshe says, I know that this is it. I know this is it. And that takes us really to the end of the Parsha. The end of the Parsha, we have, you know, more complaining, the Safsuf, you know, all their complaints. Oh my gosh, we need more meat. Everything was so much better in Egypt. And then, of course, to the Lashon Hara, that Miriam says about her brother Moshe. And Miriam Flashanara, even though said in praise of Moshe, sort of how holy he was that he separated from his wife Tzipora, she gets Sara'as. And in fact, so important is this story that of Lashon Hara of Miriam. It's one of the six things we're supposed to remember every single day. One of the Sheish Zechiros that we're supposed to remember every single day, many of us say them after davening, is to remember what Miriam did. Remember, we remember the Egel, Matan Torah, Mitzias Mitzrayim. What was so bad? What was so bad? Because this Lashon Hara was actually the best Lashon Hara. It wasn't said demeaning or malicious or gossip. It wasn't like, did you hear what happened? It was sincere, but it was a problem. And she's punished for it, the Ramban says. And it's a mitzvah to remember, the Ramban says, every single day. And the Chafetz Chaim says that the core of why we are in exile is because of Sinas Chinam we know, and Lashon Hara. The Lashon Hara that we say, which is born out of Sinas Chinam, is our sin. It's one of the, it's, you know, the Dafyom is learning Yuma now. It's one of the sins that we have to ask forgiveness for in Yom Kippur. The Torah is God for Kapara for Lashon Hara. And that, one of the major stories of Lashon Hara in the Torah is the story of Miriam. But I want to go back to like a small piece in the parsha that we like sometimes skip over, but it's a fascinating little dialogue. If you have a story, Chumash on page 784, it's Perek Yud, Pasuk Chav Tes, Pasuk 29. Story goes like this. So all of these, you know, last minute preparations are underway. So they're packing up and, you know, so Moshe's got his suitcase and he looks over and he notices that Yisro doesn't have a suitcase packed. All right, maybe the family disagreed about how to pack light or not to pack light. But Yisro doesn't have any bags packed. So remember Yisro, we haven't really heard from Yisro in a while. So he says, "Vayomer Moshe lechovav." He says to Ben Ruah Midjani, "Chose Moshe, no simanachnu." Like, come on, like let's go. Elamalkam Asher Amar Hashem, where we're going, to where you know, to where Hashem said we should go. So come with us. Lochay tanavi tavnulach. Yeshem diber tova Yisrael. Moshe Yisrael, like let's go. It's time to reap all those benefits. It's been 400 years since the, you know, since our claim as the chosen nation, the promised land. Like, let's go. So Vayomer Elav. Lo Eilech says Yisro, I'm not going. Kiel Mel Artsi ve'amoladeti Eilech. It's wild. Yisro says, I'm not going. I'm going to stay here. Lo Eilech, he's not going to go. He's Yisro. He's the father-in-law of Moshe. He's the one that when he comes into the scene, he changes the judicial system. He's the eyes and the ears of the Jewish people. And yet, for some reason, he says to Moshe, he's not going? What does this mean? So some explain that Yisro was concerned that as a convert, he would not receive a portion of the land of Israel. So if I don't have a land, why do I want to go? I'll stay here. So Moshe says, fine. Haya kisei lechimanu. When you come, haya tov asher yeti v'ashem ar v'itav nulam. No. You'll be okay. God will give you land. So what happens though? The Torah doesn't tell us what happens. It just tells us that they had this conversation. It doesn't say whether or not Yisro actually goes or doesn't actually go. So most believe that when the pasuk says "Vayisu me'ar Hashem derech shloshas yamim," they took a 3-day trip. It means that's the cliffhanger that Yisro goes along with them. That he had a fear, his fear was placated and reassured. He goes, but says the Abarbanel. The Abarbanel says, "You know why this story is here? It's because that 3-day journey was done without Moshe Rabbeinu, without Yisro." Moshe goes without Yisro. Why didn't Yisro go? Why couldn't he leave? The greatest convert in Jewish history doesn't join his people in their triumphant march to the land of Israel. The man who could detach himself from all religions, who is the father-in-law of Moshe, concerned with his welfare, who was the advisor to Paro, to go to worshiping God, he can't go? Yeah, what does that mean? So if Yisro stays home, let's understand why he stays home. He stays home in Midian. Where's Midian? We're familiar with the story that when Moshe is tending the sheep of his father-in-law, he gets with a burning bush. He had led the flock to the edge of the desert to Har Chareva. Moshe had just left Yisro's house, and he gets the burning bush. So how far did Yisro live from all the action? How far? Not very far. And while this no doubt led to his inspiration and religious commitment, because of that proximity, that closeness underscored his inability a year later to make that leap because Yisro was in his comfort zone. He was in his comfort zone. Even when he was going through life, you know, as it changed, he was still close to home. In a sense, the Abarbanel, it's a wild opinion, but the Abarbanel says that Yisro sort of fit Judaism into his life. He embraced the religion, but he wasn't able to fully envelop himself within it. It's not suggesting that Yisro was like a dual worshiper. He was dedicated. But after all this planning and everything, Yisro is not really ready. Yisro looks around and he sees a life that he's comfortable with, a routine. And until now, he really hadn't been asked to follow God blindly. He had not been forced to leave everything behind. And all of a sudden now he says, Lo Eilech, And this is what happens. As we see, the Jews, as they begin to leave and they get out of their comfort zone, what do they do right away? All of these complaints. The moment that they left, the meat, and the Bamidbar is more complaints than in Sefer Shemos. But these complaints are worse. In Bishalach, in Sefer Shemos, they're learning how to be a Jewish people. But now they're not learning. Now they're ready to go. This is the mission. This is the mantra of the Jewish people. But they begin to complain. How could they ask all of those things? Because they left those surroundings. The moment that they left those comfortable settings, they complained, they broke down. You know, thankfully today, we're not asked big tests of nosim anachnu. Not as severe as it was in the past. You know, we're not being asked to come to work on Shabbos or you don't have a job. But we're being challenged. We live in a modern world, in a secular world, and a world that creates new challenges. And we have to reevaluate to be a nation that's a nosim anachnu, to push ourselves. You know, in the desert, the Jews were faced with that same question, that same, you know, difficult challenge. And they went into miyachilenu basar, atanaf shenu yevesha. And we just celebrated Shavuos. That acceptance to push ourselves out of that comfort zone, to do a little more, to push ourselves a little bit more. As we started within the beginning, even within that box that we find ourselves, within things that were commanded. But the more that we push, the more that we challenge, the more that we move out of that routine, the closer we're able to get with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Right? Wish everybody a wonderful